Hi, my name is Beryl and I'm not it.
Hello.
I hate these microphones, like having a cock there, do you know what I mean? I am so tired and I am so tired. really shattered. It's like I went into work today and I said to the ladies there, yeah, I'm doing a chair tonight to Fargo, and Lisa said, yeah, I'm doing a chair too. I'm like, oh my God, you know, how strange is that? Two women at the same, in the same house doing the chair at the same building, you know. But yeah, you know, let me let you into my life a little bit, my past, my present, and my future. Experience, strength, and hope. And as far back as I can remember, first of all, I've got to say my accent is pretty fucked up, right? So there's a bit of French, a bit of broken French, not proper French, a bit of broken French, bit of Cockney, and bit of Northern, bit of broken English. So yeah. So I'm from the Seychelles, and as far back as I can remember is at the age of four, kind of. My mum, my dad wasn't around. My grandmother brought seven of us up. And I felt really miserable, really, really miserable, you know, just feeling kind of like there was something missing. And you know, by the age of eight, you know, my grandmother used to sell homebrew to the locals. So they'll come around, buy their bottle of drink, sit down, drink it, and then like they'll go home feeling a bit tipsy. And I felt really attracted to that. I thought, And I knew where my grandmother kept their homebrew, you know. So I would help myself. And I loved the way it made me feel. You know, it took me away from that sort of like loneliness, you know, that feeling different, missing my mum and dad. I felt quite good. And at the age of eight and a half, I was, me and my cousin kind of like, he was a couple of years older than me, we kind of explore sexually. When I saw the white thing coming out of him, I was like, what's that, you know? And at the age of 10, you know, we had a carer that helped my grandmother to look after us. You know, she sexually abused me. She was older than me. So I grew up kind of like confused, emotionally bankrupt. And my sisters and brothers was flying over to England. And left me and my brother behind, you know, out of seven. So I remember like my mum sent a letter to say, right, I'm ready for you to come over, me and my brother. I remember climbing a mango tree, literally fling myself off the tree. I was hoping to break some part of my body just so I wouldn't get on that plane. I wanted to stay in my country, the only place I knew. I've heard about England being like really cold and, you know, my country is really hot and beautiful. And the fact too, you know, I had a little kind of like little boyfriend at the age of 10, you know. He was a couple of years older than me. It was my first kind of like experience of getting butterfly in my belly every time I saw him. It was a nice experience. And then I had to come to England. You know, I was heartbroken at the age of 10. And I remember meeting my mum for the first time. Heathrow Airport, she's gone to me, your behaviour, leave it here. It's the first time I've met this woman, do you know what I mean? And I'm like, thinking, who the... Sorry, I'm going to try and be a lady tonight. I'm going to try and be a lady because I'm somebody that express myself by swearing. I love swearing, and I'm trying to give up swearing and smoking. So that's the two things that I need to give up on. So tonight I'm going to be really good and not swear. I'll give myself a medal at the end of this chair, right, for not swearing. So I thought, who the hell are you? Before I would speak, I'll think. Sometimes I'll verbal say it. Sometimes I'll just keep it there in my head and just kill you in there. So in that case with my mum, I kept it there. I thought, I'm going to make your life hell. Went home, met all my brothers and sisters again, so it was all jolly. And I couldn't speak a word of English, you know, it was like, it was a horrible time for me, and it was snowing at that time. It was just horrendous. So anyway, I went to school, started to learn how to speak English, and met this girl at school, me and her hit it. And she was in a children's home, and she was really free. She was really free. I was quite jealous of her because at home, it's like if you do something wrong, you'll get hit with slippers, stick, belt, whatever, slap. That was my culture, you know, that was the only way my mum knew how to bring us up. So I was always getting into trouble, you know, I was a very rebellious person, always looking for negative attention. And so at the age of 13, I came home late and I got the beating of my life. I ran away, went to my friend in her children's home. She's gone, I got to call social service. And social service came. Before I knew it, I was in the children's home. And I remember my mum begging me, crying, please come back home. And I thought, that's it. Later, goodbye, you know. So I stayed with my mum for 3 years. And whilst I was in care, I started glue sniffing. I loved it, loved it, loved it. Took me away from the emotion I was carrying. And then I progressed into drinking, started shoplifting. I started going to secure units because the children's home couldn't deal with me. So the best thing was secure units. From secure unit, you know, I'll go to ball stall because I couldn't stop stealing. You know, I was a thief. I just wanted what you had. If you had a coat, I would nick it from you. You know, nick people's handbag, anything. I would just steal. Didn't care. Didn't care about any consequence, you know. So ball stall, and I remember being in ball stall. This girl was hitting on me, and I quite liked her too, you know. Anyway, cut a long story short, she made my sentence go easy. I enjoyed that. And I love sport. I used to do a lot of sport, you know, that used to take me away from self too, you know. And also, you know, fantasy, I used to love fantasizing, you know, I used to watch Little House on the Prairie and thought to myself, oh my God, they look so happy, they haven't got a lot, but they're really happy. I was always looking outside of myself, you know. And I remember watching Starsky and Hutch. Oh my God, I had a crush on Starsky, you know. And then Clint Eastwood, you know, I used to fantasize about all them, you know, it's like, really. and then, like, I left the children's home. and went to look for my brother. My brother was living in Putney in this massive house, and it was full of gay men, women, prostitutes. I walked in there and there was an older guy there that was getting rent from them. I walked in there and I saw my brother injecting himself. I was like, oh my God. You know, I was in shock. I started living there, in there with them. I started going out with the girls, you know, to King's Cross, Park Lane, while they sell themselves. You know, I was only 16 and a half at that time. And then I remember going to King's Cross with one of the girls because she keeps blacking out. So I used to go with her just to make sure she was okay. And two guys stopped us and said they wanted to do business with us, you know. And I said, oh, no, not me. And she was sick. She needed some heroin. And she begged me. She said, please, you know. And I sold myself. At the age of 16 and a half, you know, people pleasing her really, just so she'll be okay, so she'll have some money to have her fix. I met this guy. My first proper kind of boyfriend, I would say, at the age of 16 and a half. I remember going to meet my sister at Barrett Shoe Shop in Holloway Road. I was brought up in Holloway Road, by the way. Went to Barrett's Shoe Shop and my sister wasn't there. This guy with suit on came and said to me, oh, your sister's not there, but I would love to take you out for a meal on a date. Had that butterfly again, you know, it's like, who, me, you talking to me, you know, a man in a suit is interested in me, you know. So I accept, went to meet him in High Street, Kensington, and he took me to this Italian restaurant. And I had spaghetti bolognese, and I didn't know how to use, you know, like to twist it up in the spoon and stuff like that, or to even eat the spaghetti. It was the first time I was having spaghetti. I was so nervous, you know, it was like spaghetti when you're on a date is the last thing you should do. He helped me. He saw that I was struggling, he helped me. He was the most proper gentleman ever. And I was with him for a year and a half, and then I find out he had two other girlfriends. And he broke my heart. He broke my little heart. And I remember seeing that needle in my brother's arm, and I wanted to do the same. So, you know, we used to hang around in Earl's Court, you know. Went to Earl's Court, the Boltons, and scored a bit of gear and got somebody to inject me. And all I can remember was I was so hot, warm feeling. I forgot about him. And I kept spewing up, but it was a nice spewing up, you know? And I wanted more and more and more. Before I knew it, I had a habit. And I started prostituting myself. You know, I started in King's Cross, then Park Lane, then Bayswater, ML School, all that kind of area, you know. And you know, because I was mixing with gay men and women, and we used to just go to like nightclubs after in the evening, I just didn't stop. It was like I was living my life in the 80s, you know, early 80s. It was lovely. It was the best time of my life. You know, but when I started like getting ill, that's when the problem started. You know, I started freebasing. I started like ripping men off, you know, like I'll go work and they'll pay me the money. And I thought, is this what I'm worth? So what I start doing is like make sure we was doing the business next to their clothes. where I could get in their wallet while they was doing whatever they was doing on top of me. And I was helping myself with the money because I felt I deserved more money. you know, I used to go to Piccadilly while the boys would go to Piccadilly. My brother sell himself, and I'll go to Soho, do clipping and stuff like that. You know, my life was total mess. It was a right mess. And then my brother died in 1990. He went missing. He went to rehab, came out, and then he went missing. I just knew there was something wrong. I hadn't seen him for 3 days. That was not like my brother. The police came knocking on my mum's door and said, "We found a body in King's Cross toilet. We need somebody to come and identify the body." And me and my sister went. And up till today, I can still visualize him just lying there, tongue hanging out. Broke my heart. And at that time, I thought, oh my God, that could have been me. And I remember people keep talking about this detox, this blind detox. And I remember ringing them up. And I went there, and it was a 3 weeks detox. I was so bankrupt emotionally. You know, I didn't care how much methadone they was giving me. I just wanted to get well, you know. And while I was there, this gay guy said to me, "Beryl, go to a rehab. 3 weeks is not enough for you." I'm not somebody that would trust anybody, but I trusted him. And I went to this rehab, and I picked this rehab because they did drinking contract. When you get to the second stage, I thought I'd let go of the drugs, and when I get to the second stage, I'll do the drinking contract. So that was in 1990. Got to the rehab, and there was no time limit how long he was going to be in the rehab. I was in there for 14 months, but I needed that 14 months. I'd done some solid work, you know, like bashing cushion, my victim, you know, doing anger work, sitting in the group, looking at my peers saying, "I'm angry, I'm angry, I'm angry," you know, just like proper dealing with my emotion, really got into it. I just wanted to get well, you know, I had enough. Having saying that, you know, while I was in the rehab, the behavior was still there, some of my behavior. Around relationship stuff. I ended up having 3 different relationships at the same time. I'm greedy. and we did cop-up group, you know. Once a month we'll do cop-up group, meaning what anything dishonest you've done, that was the time for you to say, "Yes, I've done this. I'll be sitting down like this. Arms folded, looking really defensive, while everybody else was saying whatever they've done. One guy's gone, "Yeah, I'm having a relationship with Beryl." The other guy will say, "Yes, me too, I'm having a relationship with Beryl." and I'm praying for the other one not to say nothing. And he's gone, "Yes, me too, I'm having a relationship." You know when you wish the floor could just swallow you up? So, you know, I had to unfold my arm and like ready for it, you know. You know, I learnt a lot in that rehab. I really appreciate, really grateful that I went there. So when I moved to the second stage now, I had to convince the group that I was ready for my drinking contract. I'm a manipulator. Ex-prostitute, I can manipulate anybody, do you know what I mean? I can convince you of anything. I'm good at that. So I picked somebody that I knew that I could wrap him around my little finger, and we went to the pub. We was allowed to drink 2 pints of low-strength lager or 2 glasses of wine. You know when addicts or alcoholics give each other that look? As if to say, "Fuck it." I I've just swore. And we ended up doing 4 pints of strong lager. And we got to the group the next day and said, yes, it was really hard, but we support one another. Until the next week, we'll go and do exactly the same thing over and over again. And then when I finished this place there, the second stage, my mum said, I'm so proud of you, you know, she thought I was all right. She took me to the Seychelles with her on holiday with my two nephews. And on the way back from the Seychelles, we stopped at Rome and took her off because she was really ill on the plane. She had thrombosis and the blood traveled to her lungs. And she was in Rome for 2 months, and then they transferred her to West Cross Hospital where she died. But before she died, I had one question for her, and I said to her, who's my dad? At my brothers and sisters, I'm the darkest one, and I've always felt different, not because I was darker than them, but I knew there was something not right. So she told me who my dad was, and my dad was proper well known back home in the Seychelles. He was an MP. And I thought, that makes sense why I like to argue with people and and debate, you know. I wrote to my dad and I had a respond back. I went to the Seychelles to see him. And also, before my mum died, I told her I was pregnant, and she said to me, what are you going to do with her baby? I said, well, look after it, innit? In other words, I've been sarcastic because she never looked after me, you know. So yeah, I was 5 months pregnant, and as soon as my mum died, I pressed that F it button, and I went back out there and started using crack and heroin, pregnant. When I was just over six months, I went to see my midwife, and my midwife said to me, something not right. A placenta had died, baby wasn't getting fed. So I went to the hospital, stayed in there, they detoxed me and gave me a date to induce me. And I had a little girl, 4 pound 4, it's like a bag of sugar. She was so tiny. And she wasn't withdrawing, so I was allowed to take her home. Anyway, I carried on using. When she was 4, I was in the crack house, and so she service stepped in, took her away from me. My sister took her in and looked after her. I was so angry with my sister, so angry with social service, because I didn't want to look at my wrongdoing, how I got there. It was like me just lashing out at everybody. And that was my life, my whole life. I was like just blaming everybody, blaming the world, because I felt like I had a bloody right to. And also police was looking for me. I had a warrant out for me. I had 23 accounts of deception. I used to nick people's handbag and look at their signature and forge a signature and do cash back and just run to different supermarket like a mad woman, just get as much cash as I can get away with, and just madness. So I had 23 accounts of deception, checkbook and card, free handling stolen goods. Police came knocking on my door 5 days after my little girl's been taken away from me, and that's it. I just had to surrender. Game over. Went to court, got 18 months. Stick a pin on the 18 months. Through my whole life, every single year, I used to find myself in prison. Every single year, and it saved my life. It saved my life because while I was in prison, it gave me that time to work down the gym, build my body up, you know, have 3 meals a day, and then go back out there and bash myself to pieces again. So that was my life, you know. And also, too, having sex in prison, it was brilliant, you know. And for me, too, my mentality was, when I was in prison, I was in trouble. What else could you do to me? You know, I used to get into trouble. I was always down the block. I was so naughty, really, really naughty. I just didn't take no... I couldn't take nothing from nobody. Nobody could tell me nothing. You know, it's like I had no role model. You know, my mum and dad didn't bring me up. Who are you to tell me what to do, you know? So while I was in prison, I worked with social service, worked with my sister. Daughter kept coming round to see me in prison. And I remember while I was in prison, because what I do when I leave prison, I go straight to an off license. Before I know it, I'm in crack house doing the same thing, repeating the same thing, expecting different results, step two. And my step one showed me that I can't use anymore, you know, I can't buy a bit of gear, use some of it, and then save some for tomorrow. No way, it doesn't happen. You know, my step three shows me that I'm alive. I had a higher power at all time looking out for me, you know. You know, my step four showed me that I, my fear, no wonder I used, because my fear had the better of me. You know, I was a scared little girl, you know, frightening little girl. All I was looking for was attention. You know, I wanted love. I would always go and look for it in different places. I'll pick the wrong men, I'll pick the wrong women, anything just to get that little bit of comfort. That's been all my life, that's what I've been doing. You know, if you can put up with my behaviour, then let's go, let's do it, you know? And I did, I brought that behaviour into recovery with me, but I'll tell you a little bit more about that, right? So yeah, my 18 months, I work with social service, I work with my sister, came out of prison, wrote the letter to that rehab I went to in 1990. They didn't do no drinking contract now, they stopped. From prison, I went straight there. I did 5 months in that rehab, and then I thought, hold on a minute, I keep hearing about this 12 step. I've never done 12 step before. So I went to an all women 12 step program. And I knew I couldn't manipulate them, do you know what I mean? I knew it was game over, you know. So I went there and done step one, two, and three, and started going to meetings, seeing my daughter, I was doing the right thing. And then I met this guy, I went on a blind date, met this guy. He had 5 years clean. And at the time I had about 5.5 months clean, and he was working in treatment. And I was attracted to his clean time, his work, what he was doing. He came fair down the road. Was in a relationship with him for 5 years. It was one on, you know, on, off, go to meeting and share about my shit in the meeting. You know, he'll be seen in the same meetings, me going red, you know, it's like... Because I'm very honest, you know, if something's going on for me, I've got to get it out there. I've got to share about it. I don't care. You chose to be in a relationship with me. We're both recovering addicts. Everybody else is going to know about it, right? So we went for outside help. And then, like, 5 years being with him, he said to me, do you want to get married? I thought he'll never fucking ask, do you know what I mean? I've always wanted to get married, always. I've always wanted to wear that white dress, the page boys, the bridesmaid, the limousine, the Rolls Royce, the full works, you know? I got my dream. I was working as a key worker at that time, and when things was going wrong with me and him, I would go to my manager and get a bit of comfort from him. But I knew my manager fancied me and I fancied him. So 3 days before I got married, I thought, you know what, Beryl, get it out of your system, just do it. You know, I ended up sleeping with him. He was invited to the wedding. It was in a Catholic church. I thought to myself, I'll go and confess later. So 6 months into this marriage, I'm talking to my sponsor saying, but I love him. He's walked past, my husband's walked past and said, who are you talking about? I've gone, no, nothing. I couldn't do it. I couldn't stay in this marriage any longer. It lasted 6 months. By that time, I was 5 years clean. He was 10 years clean. And he went in relapse. I carried on my journey and making an amends to him. He phoned me one day, he said, Beryl, would you detox me? I thought, yeah, I don't have to tell him the truth. This is my way to like make my amends, you know. So I took him in and I detoxed him. You know, talking about amends, you know, like my daughter was on top of my list, really. I did get my daughter back after 4.5 years. I remember going to court and the judge said to me, Miss Poffin, you can have your daughter back. I better start crying. It was like giving birth again. You know, I worked so hard. I wanted to get her back. You know, social service told me to jump this high and I would jump that bit higher. You know, it was so tough. It was hard. I did relapse once and told my sponsor about it. She said, just go and pick up a white keyring. Don't tell social service, you know. And I put my daughter on my amends list, and I remember going to her, sitting there down, saying, I need to talk to you, I need to make an amends to you. She just said, Mum, don't bother, you know, you're clean, you're here. It was so emotional, do you know what I mean? And making amends to myself, you know, because the road I went down on, you know, that journey I went through my using, it was not nice. I didn't care about anybody. I didn't care about myself. You know, coming into recovery, working on myself, you know, writing down my step four and my step five shows me that I can trust another human being. It shows me that I am human after all. Do you know what I mean? That, yes, I've messed up, but you know what? I can correct my wrongs, you know. And you know, my step six, defects of character, of course. You know, I can be very jealous, insecure. My anger, you know, my anger is, you know, I use anger to cover, to block people out, you know. I can kill somebody with my mouth, do you know what I mean? I can tell you about yourself. It's just so sad when I sit down and look at where this little girl was, that grown into this woman, what she had to do to survive, and coming into recovery, that was really tough too. You know, it's like, you got to find a sponsor, you got to do the step. It's like, really? I did find a sponsor. Thank God I was with her for 10 years, so that goes to show I can be in a relationship. However, I got to step four with her, and then I thought, I didn't trust her anymore. I remember going outside, and I paid big money and went down this thing called Landmark Forum. You know what? You do the whole step all in once, you know. You know, my thing was, my dad never loved me, but my dad didn't even know till I wrote to him how I felt. So I went to the Seychelles to see my dad. He sat me down, he said, yes, you are my daughter, had an affair with your mum. However, I am a married man, I've got 3 kids in my marriage, I've got 19 outside of my marriage. And I thought, you, as an MP, you'd abuse your position. But I didn't voice it. It was up there. I said to myself, thank God I live in England, because if I was in the Seychelles, I'd end up sleeping with one of my brother and I would know. So Seychelles is a very small place, you know. That's why I never go out with a Seychellian. So yeah, being in recovery, I slept around. You know, I'll go to meeting, put my stiletto on. I'll dress like I'm going to a disco and turned up, you know, walking in my stiletto. I'll make sure people know that I'm here, you know, with the noise that makes, like. And I'll be wiggling myself and, you know, like. It was mad, you know, but it kept me coming back. It kept me going to me. It kept me going to meetings. It came to a point where I thought, okay, Beryl, fellowship is quite small. You can't get a bad name, right? But yeah, I was one of these person where I'll be in a relationship, I'll finish with you before you finish with me, and I'll make sure I've got another one waiting there for me so I could just jump straight in it. I could not be on my own, couldn't sit with myself, I'll have to be with somebody. 5 years ago, I hit rock bottom around relationship. Proper hit rock bottom. I had a little mini breakdown. I think I met my match. And it came to a realization where I'd been hiding away from that topic, that part of me. I didn't want to look at it no matter what. And I had to get the paper out and pen just to look at that part of it. Do you know what I mean? Because I kept blaming this one, that one, she off like that one. Never me. I had to point that finger on me around the relationship. That's my main core, you know. I've been on my own for 5 years, a miracle. I did dip my toe in and had a companion. Companion. For God's sake, I'm coming up to 58 year old. I'm not ready to be sitting on the settee. Do you want to come here, Taylor? You know, holding him. I'm not that person yet. Do you know what I mean? But I thought, let me just dip my toe in. But it wasn't for me. I'm happy and content on my own. I don't need anybody, men or women, to make me feel whole. I've got no desire to be with another recovering addict. I'm saying that now, but I don't know what my HP's got planned for me, you know. I do want to get married again because I feel ready, where I've done the work on myself. Yeah, you know, through working the 12 step, I went to do a silent meditation. I went to this place for 10 days. I thought, oh my God, I'm not going to talk for 10 days. How am I going to do that? It was so scary. But I went to this place, locked my phone away. There was about 250 people there. And I did it. It was the most beautiful experience I've ever had. And I need to go back there again, you know. I love meditation. I love waking up in the morning, just having that bit of silent, that quiet moment, without any TV, without any phone on, without any outside connection. And, you know, I haven't, you didn't give me enough time, you know, it's like, I've got so much that I would like to talk about. You know, with my daughter, she was in a domestic violent relationship, and I've only got one daughter. And I wanted to go and blow his kneecap off. And again, if I didn't have this program, I would end up in prison and I would have been useless for my daughter and my grandson. Because he was beating her up after a week after she gave birth to my grandson. Social service was involved, and I ended up holding this little boy, bottle feeding him. And today, you know, my grandson's 10-year-old and we've got the most amazing relationship. I love him to bits. What I didn't do for my daughter, I put my energy into my grandson. You know, recovery is amazing. And, you know, if you are new around, just find a home group. Don't put no stiletto on. Just turn up and just follow the suggestion. Trust me, this program really works and it's free. And for me, I'm 21 years and I never thought I could get a day clean. If it's worked for me, it can work for anybody. I've got real friend today, you know. Most of all, I can be myself. I'm a crazy bitch, but I'm a good crazy bitch. Do you know what I mean? I'm a nice person. And I never thought I could say this about myself. You know, my family loves me to pieces. They come to me for advice today, you know. Recovery is just amazing. I go on holiday. I love my holiday, you know. But with this, I'm going to say, if you didn't get anything from me, you must be really mad.
Thank you.
Thank you.